Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. So we were talking about emotion, and we can probably sum that up as that emotion is the movers. It's the movers in your life, the things that move you. They emotion you. They set you into motion. Now, there's a lot of different movers, and it's kind of like that little thing we see on the desks of people where they have like six little silver balls or steel balls hanging there from strings, and you pick up one silver ball and you swing it out and you let it come and hit the others, and it hits the others, but only one ball on the other end swings out. And if you pull back two balls, and then all of a sudden two. And the fact is one mover causes the balls way at the end to move. You don't see the ball that moves get hit, but you see all the others get hit. And this is a chain reaction that takes place. And the emotions work much that same way. There's lots of different factors, physical factors, mental factors, that socio factors, hereditary factors, which are also physical, but they're kind of all hooked together, and that's you. And something hits them and causes a reaction and emotion at the other end. Now, what happens is there are foreign objects that come into play that sometimes get inserted in the process, and they begin to affect the whole of the process. So you want to get rid of those things that are not you that have gotten in there that are affecting you. A lot of these people who commit these crimes over and over again, these heinous crimes, they want somebody to stop them. There was one, I can't remember his name right offhand, but when he was going to the electric chair or going to be executed, he thought that this was the only way to cure him. It's not the only way to cure him. It didn't really cure him. It just stopped him. It stopped him in that physical body, but didn't cure him. It wasn't a solution. But that's what people decided to do with him. There are other things to do. And what happens is that the evil, there's actually, now if you listen to our shows on Secrets of the Universe and Heaven and the quantum effect, the string theory, you realize that science is saying that there are other multiple dimensions, and in these dimensions, entities can live, and they're spending millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to open doors into these other realms, these parallel universes that they believe are out there. Now, these aren't crazy religionists. Well, they are, but they're science religionists, because science is a religion now. And they believe that these things exist, and of course we believe that they exist. People who have studied the Bible and read the Bible, that heaven and hell exists. What are they? They're parallel dimensions in which entities live, and those entities may try a number of different ways to influence us. Christ didn't come to rule over us and trick us. He came to show us how to be set free. Now, the evil comes and they want to manipulate and control and force us. And we see this manifested in the world today, where your neighbor wants to force you to contribute to his welfare. This is evil. This is the deeds of the Nicolaitans. And they want to force you, and they think it's okay. They've become so comfortable with it. The idea of having public schools and public supported fire departments and everything. I mean, obviously, fire department's a good thing, right? But it should be supported by voluntarism. Otherwise, you bind one another. You covet one another's goods. You desire, you force one another to contribute to your welfare. And you've opened a door into a universe that we call hell. You're opening the door to hell, and you're being drawn near the ways of hell. Not the ways of righteousness, not the ways of God, who gives you choice. Satan takes choice away from you. He wants to choose what you're going to do and what you can't do and must do. And he disguises his power to control what you're doing by saying he's going to set you free. Great swelling words. He's going to set you free. But he's actually going to bring you into bondage. You know, it's like the people who want communism because they want a fair society. And they believe that that will... No. That empowers somebody else to decide what will be fair and what will not be fair. And how to control you and how to manipulate you and everybody else. But anyway, we're getting off the subject there a little bit, but yet not really that far off the subject. So we were talking about how this works, where you bite somebody else. Be careful you do not bite one another, lest ye be devoured. And you pass on the trauma that's in you by traumatizing somebody else. Well, you can pass on the righteousness in you as well, by loving one another, by doing things for one another. We had somebody in one of the congregations that wanted to leave the congregation, and they actually moved away already anyway, but they didn't want to be associated anymore because they said there was no fruit in the congregation. And I thought, you know, I chuckled when I heard this, and I asked the minister, who was it who pulled more time and energy from you and the rest of the congregation than all the people in the congregation? Well, it was that individual. They were the most demanding. They received the most help from anybody. And they contributed probably the least. Yet they didn't see any fruit. Well, what's fruit? You know, they don't realize that they... And what they were doing was going off and falling in love with the ritual, the form. And of course, they don't need fruit because they always got the government. The government will give them fruit, will give them unemployment, and will help them out with welfare and food stamps and all these things. So that, and they think that that's fruit. But what it actually is doing is drawing them into a spiritual realm, where you can bite one another, where it's legal to bite one another. It's actually encouraged to bite one another, to take from people who have because you don't have. And so you're following a spirit in this other realm, and you're getting closer and closer to the spiritual source of the reality that you're creating, by following the deeds of the Nicolaitans. Back to that deeds of the Nicolaitan, which you need to look up and find out what the deeds of the Nicolaitans are. So what happens if evil bites you and you forgive them? Now you set up a process whereby that you forgive them in love. Don't just forgive them as some sort of ritual, but you actually lovingly forgive them. You realize that they do not know what they do. And I've just started an article on that, where some people were translating "forgive them not, for they know what they do," instead of "forgive them, they know not what they do." And I show in Greek, standard Greek syntax. And then I back this up by looking at the theme of the Bible from the Old Testament to the New Testament. I'm not quite done with it, but we will release it on the networks shortly. Or when we get the time to do so. But the reality is that forgive them, they know not what they do. Forgive them out of love. That's a power. Energy flows. From, and now you're drawing near Christ in the character of Christ, in the energy that is from the realm of Christ, which comes by way of the Holy Spirit, flows from you to them, and it will drive demons away. It will drive the evil away. They cannot stand the light. To them, it is painful, and you drive them away. If you fight them on their terms, if you resist them evil on its terms, you will feed evil. You will make it stronger in your life. But anyway, let's go back to this what is inside you that is stimulating the emotions, making, driving you, the driving forces of your life. Are they all good? I mean, there are certain natural ones, reproduction, find food, hunting and foraging. I will do my math problems and then I will get to eat this orange. So he's tapping in. He's created a social structure at the dining room table where he does his studies. I think that's where he does them. I'm not sure where he does them. Where if I finish this problem, I get to eat that orange slice. And we talked about that in the last show, if anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about. But he's created a social environment in which he is motivated to do what he needs to get done because he logically knows that he needs to get it done. His parents have told him to get it done and he wants to please them. But that's not enough. He has to create this extra ritual of finish the problem and eat the orange. And these are mechanics of society. This is how we do things a lot of times. What are other motivating factors that are inside us that we don't see that are causing us not to be able to, where we need this counterbalance in our socioeconomic structure? And are there elements inside of us, and how do we get rid of them, that are detrimental to life, that are actually causing us, you know, like causing Jeffrey Dahmer to kill and eat people, causing somebody else to be rude? I mean, it doesn't have to be the extreme. We see the extreme, but the same process will take place on more subtle levels. What is causing you to abandon your congregation, go walk away from it and go somewhere else and accept ideas that you've never known before? Why is it convenient to do that? Is it because when I'm with the congregation, I am seeing parts of myself I do not want to see? Is my congregation, the people I'm congregating with, actually not tickling my ears and making me feel good, but they're actually challenging me to see myself as I really am? And how did they do that? You see, if you patiently love somebody, kind to them, help them, and you don't do it for any selfish motivation, you know what's going to happen? They're going to see their selfish motivation. It's going to bring a light to the relationship. Remember, emotions is about relationships as much as, you know, a lot of, or the lack of those relationships. When people are bringing light to it because they're just treating you with the love of Christ, you may find that light uncomfortable. If you have somebody in your congregation that you think, like, this person really doesn't belong here, they got all these, you know, the way they do things and the way they treat people and they're lazy or they're selfish, whatever it is. I mean, it could be a million things. And you think, why are they here? You just keep turning the light up. You don't have to necessarily criticize them or pick on them. You just have to love them. And if you learn how to love properly, you will drive them away. Christ could have drove away all the people that were trying to crucify him. Anytime he wanted, he could have drove them away and stopped them in their tracks. But he chose not to because he was following a plan, which most people do not understand. Most religionists today don't understand what Christ was really doing. Christ was opening a door. Problem is, everybody's going through the other door that evil opens. How does evil open a door? It gets you to want things, lust after things. It will turn you over to unnatural passions. And when you see people being turned over to unnatural passions, you know that the door is opening to the world, this realm of evil. And that's opening wide now, which is actually part of the hot topic that I promised to talk about, but I didn't tell anybody what it was. What is inside of us How did it get there? Is it us or is it something foreign to us? Does it have a life of its own? Does it have an agenda of its own? Who is making our choices for us? Are we making our choices or is somebody else making our choices and convincing us that it's us? All the temptation doesn't come from outside. It may not be us. It may come from inside. So the question is, what is us and what is not us? Who is the enemy? The enemy, is it us or is it in us? What do we really love? Who are we as individuals? Why do we have these phobias? There's all these kinds of questions. Now, the debate that's going on in the world today is, what bathrooms are we allowed to use? we've got the world on the brink of economic collapse. Whole world on the verge of economic collapse. You got 30 days supply of wheat in the pipeline worldwide to feed the world. We're on the verge of what is probably going to be global cooling. Certainly vast weather changes that can devastate crops worldwide and interrupt the flow of food unbelievably, so that millions, even billions of people will starve to death. We are having political events worldwide that could end up in, as well as geological and astronomical events that could shut down power for half the planet overnight, which according to, the people that do the studies say that 90%, if this happened in America, 90% of Americans would be dead within the first year. What is it, 400 million Americans? That would leave, 40 million Americans when we're done? That's not very good figures. for the whole United States, could happen in Europe, could happen a lot of places. Now, you shut down the power, Africa would suffer tremendously, but they shut down the rest of European and American influence and trade, and Africa could go back into the Dark Ages. Same with South America. I mean, people would be back in the jungles trying to survive and killing each other and eating each other and everything else. There have been climate changes from time to time back in 500 AD where there was cannibalism in Europe and in Asia because there simply was no growing season. For several years, there was no summer, period. And you couldn't grow any kind of crops, failed over and over again. There's 7 billion, maybe 8 billion people in the world today. They all eat every day. If you start devastating the crops like there was in 500 AD, the last major global cooling was in probably around 1700 to the early 1800s. Their rivers were freezing over all winter that don't freeze over now. By 2020, they may be freezing over again. Maybe not. I don't know. But what's happening in society is that we're moving, whole of society is moving and being moved mentally and emotionally away from certain patterns to the patterns that we call the deeds of the Nicolaitans. And they don't, with all that happening in the world, people are arguing over, can transgender people, a guy who thinks he's a woman, use the women's restroom? And they're arguing about it. And people are saying, we're shocked. We're facing all this possible Iranian nuclear wars, EMPs from Korea, economic collapse worldwide, food shortages. We're facing all this stuff, and you guys are worried about who's using what bathroom. Well, actually, what is the most significant event taking place? This controversy over who's using what bathroom is actually as telling as anything else in the news. Of course, mostly what you see in the news is ridiculous and absurd. And it's insane. You got the Attorney General threatening the state of Carolina because they're saying no, men have to use the men restroom, women have to use the women restroom. They're not picking on anybody. They're just saying you got male plumbing, use the male restroom. You got female plumbing, use the female restroom. That's it. That's the division. You know what the reality? You got male parts, use the male restroom. Period. But now we're going to threaten the entire state and everybody in the state because what? Less than 1% of the people want to use the other restroom. We're going to take a lawsuit against them and because of this terrible thing where they say guys use the guys' restroom, women use the women's restroom. It's insane. It's crazy. And they sit up there and they talk on the news and people listen to them like they have some sort of sense in what they're saying. But now a lot of you are saying, well, this is absolutely crazy. But it is crazy, but it is telling. It's psychosis. They can't see the truth. They can't see reality. I heard one news commentator point out, it says, wait a minute, you get to use the women's restroom. You're a guy. You get to use the women's restroom because you feel like you're a woman. Well, what happened if I feel handicapped? Then I get to use handicapped parking. I'd love to see somebody. I would, you know, if I had the time and the energy and all that stuff, I'd love to challenge that in the court. Wait a minute. I felt handicapped. That's discrimination to say that I have to have, a doctor's prove my handicap sticker. Because I'm not handicapped. I just feel handicapped. So I should be able to use the handicap parking, right? I mean, if you feel like a woman, you get to use the women's restroom. Even though you're not a woman, you're a man. The reality is you're a man. But you feel like a woman, so you get to use the women's restroom. Well, I should be able to, I feel handicapped, I should be able to use the handicapped parking. You can't give me a ticket anymore. What happened if I'm from Iran or Iraq or Syria or Mexico? I feel like an American. I should be able to come to America. I don't need a passport. I feel like an American. I should be allowed to come to America. You can't stop me at the borders. That's discrimination. I feel like an American. I mean, like, this is how crazy it is. This is how insane it is. You know, that they do this. Now, what is a psychiatrist, chief psychiatrist of Johns Hopkins Hospital for 26 years, a medical institution that used to be involved and pioneered sex change surgery for people who say, I feel like a woman, and they want to change themselves physically. They later ceased that practice, but they pioneered it originally. Okay, what does he say about this? Stress that the culture meme, he says, or ideas that one sex is fluid and a matter of choice is extremely damaging, especially to young people. You know, they call it gender dysphoria, a state of unease or generalized dissatisfaction with your gender, your life, because of your gender. So you want to change it because you're dissatisfied, because they call it dysphoria. It actually should be called a syndrome, but they got away from that because, you know, that makes people feel bad. It's psychosis. You're a guy, but you don't want to admit that you're a guy. You don't feel comfortable with it. Well, what about the guy who got his arm cut off and he felt like the arm was still there? Or the guy who felt like his arm was not his arm and wanted it cut off? And so he actually had his arm. Now, you know, now he is handicapped, you know, because he had his arm cut off. And so now he can't work. And so now he gets to be on government dole. What about the guy who thinks he's a six-year-old girl and now he gets adopted by a family and he has a family, but he doesn't want to have to support them anymore because he's only a six-year-old girl. At least he feels like that. That's crazy. But we're not supposed to use the word crazy. That's what he feels. So we're supposed to cater to it. But according to this Dr. McHugh, no, you shouldn't cater to it. The condition of feeling one's emotional or psychological identity as a male or female to be the opposite to one's biological reality. That's what this gender dysphoria is all about. Now, some say it belongs to a family of disorders, assumptions about the body, such as anorexia anorexia nervosa, which anorexia, where people aren't eating and they're becoming. I know some people, they were down to like 90 pounds and their organs were starting to shut down because they had this fear of weight gain. They feared this pathological fear of weight gain, which leads to these terrible eating patterns and a state of malnutrition, usually excessive weight loss. That's what this anorexia nervosa is. Okay, so how does Dr. McHugh says? He says the treatment of this gender dysphoria should not be directed at the body, as with a surgery or hormones, any more than the treatment of anorexic patients should be liposuction. So, I don't know. Well, the ones that I've seen, there's no way that you could use liposuction. But he says it's insane. The idea that you change the person physically to match what they feel, you know, is, he says, that's crazy. Now, he's from the hospital that was pioneering this, these operations. But he's saying that this is not right. He says a lot more than that. Now, I'm sure not a lot of our listeners, but a lot of people that might listen to this eventually will disagree with what I'm going to say, but I'm going to back it up with reality and statistics. But then I'm also going to show you why this is a sign of our times and how this fits in to where we are headed as a world, not a nation, but as a world today. We'll be right back. So, welcome back. So, we were talking about the fact that the sign of the times is the fact that people who are males think they're females, and people who are females think they are males. There's a lot more to this. This is just part of that. But what it is that people are perverting the natural use of sexuality to something other than the purpose of sexuality, which is the reproduction of the species. That's what it's there for, is to reproduce the species. We've perverted that, and that is a sure sign that the species is about to go through a huge die-off. A huge die-off. Now, it's not, the people who are victim to this are not the cause of it. The cause goes much deeper, and there are subtle things that are changing that are not so. I mean, you always have somebody throwing up a picture of some guy, clearly a guy in drag, and saying, you know, look at this. This is crazy and everything. Well, that's obvious. I mean, it's like holding up Jeffrey Dahmer and talking about bad habits. Yeah, he's got bad habits. Okay, he kills and eats people. But there's a lot of bad habits that are not quite as dramatic, but they're still moving down the same path. And so the idea of dealing with the problem of transgenderism or gender dysphoria by actually allowing them to have a physical surgery is crazy. Even putting on a dress and wig and lipstick and stuff, that's crazy too. It's crazy because you're hurting the individual who has the fixation. You're humoring a psychosis. It is a psychosis because the reality is they are this, but they want to think they are something else because they have some sort of discomfort with what they with reality. The person who has the arm that he thinks is not his arm is invaded somewhere. What's happening is mapping out in his physical body is something that is going on in his spiritual being, in his emotional and spiritual being. There's something in him that is not him. And he has mapped it to exclude that what's in him is that's not him is his arm. That's where he's put it. He's put it in his arm. And if I cut off my arm, then I won't have this foreign thing in me anymore. That's it will be detached. I will detach it from me. But the reality is it's spiritual. Something is in him that is foreign. He has recognized that, but he has mapped it into his arm. And he thinks if I cut it off, it'll be gone. But no, it'll still be in there. And what is it doing? It is driving him to destroy him. One finger, one hand, one arm at a time. He cut off the arm and says, oh, we should have cut off the elbow too. Because now it's the elbow is foreign. It doesn't have anything to do with the body. This is physical mapping of an emotional and spiritual problem that we can deal with, that we can go to. And we have to all we have to do is see it. You know, like the guy who has the phantom pain. He sees what looks like his right arm. He knows it's not his right arm. He's looking in a box and he's seeing the reflection of his left arm. Mentally, he knows exactly what he's looking at. But as long as he imagines it to be his right arm moving like his left arm, then he is allowed to remap the pain centers till the pain goes away. His brain is just doing this back there in his subconscious, and it's freeing him from the pain. This is what forgiveness does, by the way. Forgiveness can remap your pet, and what will destroy you? Rituals, which is idolatry, where you say, oh, we have to follow this ritual. We have to follow this pattern, physical pattern. We will follow this physical pattern, and it will straighten us out spiritually. That's witchcraft. That's idolatry. No, you have to look, you have to take the spiritual journey into yourself and see yourself as you really are. Forgive yourself as well as the other people who have gotten into you. Their identities have gotten into you. You have to forgive that in order to be set free. This is what forgive them. They know not what they do leads to setting you free. That is the spirit that you have to approach everything. But the transgender person, the person who is uncomfortable with the reality of his sex, the reality of his anatomy, you know, whether it's his right arm or his, you know, or another part of his body he thinks he needs to cut off in order to be comfortable with him, with the reality of himself. This is all a spiritual thing. This has nothing to do with your physical body. It doesn't have nothing to do. Your hormones are being secreted based on the way in which you've been wired, and you've been wired because of trauma. 10 to 15 years after surgical reassignment, the suicide rate of those who had undergone the sex reassignment surgery rose to 20 times that of their comparable peers. That's amazing. So in other words, if you recommend or pay for the surgery, you have created the risk that you are 20 times more likely to want to take your life within the next 10 years, 10 to 15 years. You have done that patient a disservice. Now this is, because he went on to say, it proves not easy nor wise to live in a counterfeit sexual garb. whether it's clothes or you actually physically alter yourself through surgery. The most thorough follow-up of sex reassignment people, extending over 30 years and conducted in Sweden, where their culture is strongly supportive of transgenders, documents their lifelong mental unrest. Why? Because the problem is not, you don't change the problem by changing the physical reality of the individual. We have gone so far that parents are actually altering their children. That's mutilation. Now, that, again, this is a sign of the times. What are you doing that's much more subtle, not so obvious, that is keeping you from seeing the truth about yourself? Again, you know, like I say, we can talk about people who have bad habits and use Jeffrey Dahmer as an example, or we can take somebody else who has something a lot less dramatic. Like you, I'm sure you have some bad habits, things you do you should not do, but you do them habitually because of something pulling the strings of your emotions from inside yourself that does not really belong there, that's not really you. You want to be free of that. You have to take that journey within. And one of the ways to take that journey within is, who haven't you forgiven? Who giving? You cannot give to people you don't forgive. It's very, very difficult. You're not attracted to give to people you don't forgive. So you need to give and forgive in order to take that journey. It helps you. It draws you near. Sacrifice. The word sacrifice in the Hebrew is from a word that means to draw near. You want to draw near the righteousness of Christ. You have to sacrifice for the well-being of other people. Maybe it's your time. Maybe it's just showing up at meetings. Maybe it's going to, you know, like all our congregations are small. They're meant to be small because they need to be intimate. You don't want a 500-man congregation. You want 50 10-man congregations. And even the 50 are broke down into five separate groups of 10-man congregations. That's how networking works. Otherwise, it becomes a cancer. And so you link these relationships. Okay, so how do you start a food kitchen with 10 people? That's not very many people. That take a lot of time. Well, there's lots of food kitchens out there already started. There's a lot of shelters already started. There are a lot of people out there already working with the homeless. You get together in your congregation, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, and you go and you work with those people. And you bring the light of Christ. You're not going to start your big charitable organization and all this stuff. You're just going to go help serve one another. But there's good ways to do this and bad ways to do this. And you can figure that out. That's another topic for another time. There's a thing called autogenophilia. It's a sex-fueled mental illness. They actually say it's a mental illness. The term was created by Ray Blanchard. And he defines it as a man is paraphilic tendencies to be sexually aroused by the thought or image of himself as a woman. Now, who do we know who has that feeling? Well, Bruce Jenner. You know, Bruce Jenner. I haven't ever met the guy, and I don't know the guy. I remember back when he was in the Olympics and everything. But what's really going on is that he's a autogenophilia, and he's drawn to that. And we can go through, there's all kinds of little names and, you know, they categorize it. And we can get all complicated about it and everything. And there really isn't any point in that. And the reality is this is not natural. But now he dresses up like a woman and all this kind of stuff and everything. And people actually encouraged this by giving him Woman of the Year award. It was like insane. But and it's going to lead to more and more trauma. The more and more people cater to his delusion, the more disservice you're doing to him. You're going to create more and more trauma for him. You're going to prolong it. It's going to be a greater fall. And the fact is he's fooling himself. And he's also trying to fool Mother Nature. And it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. So what are we going to... What does all this mean? Romans 1:26 says, "For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections. For even their women..." Now he says even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. Now, that means the men were doing it, but even the women were doing it. And of course, we have that taking place today. And the next verse is, "And likewise also the men leaving the natural use of the woman burned with a lust, in their lust, one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet." Now, what are they talking about? I mean, that's what we're seeing. That's why you have 20 times the suicide rate. That's not just, that's not a small figure. Suicide rate amongst people who we cater to and we think we're helping them out by saying, "Oh yes, let them change and, let them do this and let's let them have their, so they can go into any restroom and everything." We're catering to their psychosis, which is going to be bringing them closer and closer to, with the ultimate loss, which is suicide. There's a whole lot of damage that is being done to them psychologically, emotionally, physically, that is not easily repaired in most cases, and physically they can't go back. And they're actually doing this to children. And why is that? Because they're the people, not just the people doing this, but the people that are catering to them are being turned over to an unnatural approach to very natural reality. And they get violent when you point out that this is crazy, insane, unnatural. But the fact is that this is a sign of the times. And this is part of the extreme, but there's a lot more subtle things. Like people who go and want to go to public school, want to go to get public benefits, welfare, food stamps, all these things. And they think, well, this is the way we do it now. We take from men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. We need this assistance, because I have kids who need help. I have, how else can I support them if I don't get assistance from the government? Well, have you been seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness with your whole heart, mind, and soul? Have you been laying down your life daily as Christ laid down his life for you? If you had Christ in you, that would not be hard to do. But it is hard for you to do. And so we take an orange and we slice the orange up and say, you get an orange, you get a slice if you deal with this problem. You have to do it. You have to set the parameters. So you gather together in congregations. And guess what? All the people in your congregation, they're not going to be a perfect. So you get into this congregation and you deal with the people that are in that congregation because God's put them there, brought them to you. And but mostly what you're going to deal with is you, your unforgiveness, your impatience, your unnatural desires. I mean, obviously you don't have to be, transgender or transvestite to have unnatural desires. You can just be angry. You want to be judged. You want people to give you fruit. You say, I don't see any fruit being born in this congregation. In reality, you are the one who is the recipient of almost all the fruit that the congregation brought. What is the fruit? What was the fruit of Christ? Christ came to give his life willingly. If Christ is in you, you will gather together to give your life willingly. Don't you do that when you have children? When you have children and you give up your time, you wake up in the middle of the night, you take care of them, you go to work, you earn money, you don't spend it on yourself, you spend it on your kids, you spend it on what the kids need, you do without, you sacrifice for your kids. Why? Because that's part of God drawing you towards the kingdom. Now, the other realm that you can be drawn to, what is it going to be? It's going to be selfish. It's going to say, oh, we want nicer school. Let's just tax everybody in the community and force them to pay for nicer school, more health care for the teachers, more vacation time for the teachers. We will just take from the general population. Now we see the rise of socialism in America, where it's not only okay to say that you're a socialist, it is a driven thing in millions upon millions upon millions of individuals. The spirit of socialism is alive and well and being promoted as a good thing. And what does it say after that verse 27? And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. You know what? Atheists? People that don't believe in God think you're funny for thinking that there's multiple realms, which is actually a scientific reality. God gave them over to reprobate minds to do those things which are not convenient. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate. Oh, they love debate. Deceit. They love to deceive. They get a kick out of it. They actually giggle when they fool you. Malignity. Whisperers. Oh, they love to tell stories behind your back. Backbiters. Oh, they love that. Oh, you guys just don't know like I know. Haters of God. They actually are haters. They may have a form of godliness, but they despise the power thereof. They deny it. Haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things. And so you'll be choosing, what liar do I want to elect as prime minister, president, or whatever? They will be disobedient to parents. They won't even care about their parents. They won't be, for generations now, we haven't had to take care of our parents. We've turned them over to the government to take care of them. Because we gave. Our sacrifice was our socials. We paid into Social Security. Our parents are supposed to be taken care of by Social Security. And we get vehement if we think, there were riots at the time of Jesus Christ mentioned in the Bible that those riots took place because they accused the government of pilfering their Social Security. You probably don't know that. Of course, you didn't know what Nicolaitans were. I'm not here to tickle your ears to make you feel good about your error. I want you to see it so you turn around, repent, and go back the other way. Without understanding the covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, why are you in a congregation? To learn to love. You don't join a congregation so that people will love you. You learn to love them. And when you have kids, you'll have disobedient kids. You have to love the disobedient kid just as much as the obedient one. You have to take care of them. We have had a number of border collies. We had one border collie. It was the last of the litter of pups, and it was always stupid. We took care of it and took care of it and took care of it. And it never really learned to herd sheep. Never really learned to carry its own weight. Ate lots of dog food. And eventually it passed on. But we took care of it. Because that's what we were given. That's what we got. We sold all the good ones. So anyway, that's the way it is with life. You have to take care of those that are put before you. And you gather in a congregation the same as you gather in a husband and wife. You know, the divorce was given to you because of the hardness of your heart. And if you divorced your wife and then you wanted to remarry her again, that was forbidden because God hates sin. What was the sin? Well, the sin was that you divorced her to begin with, that you were unforgiving to begin with. And now you decide you want to go back. So I'm not going to oppose that Old Testament deal, but they impose that. And if you want a divorce, this is final. You don't get to remarry her again in 6 months, even if you are Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor. You don't get to come back together again because I don't want you to separate this way. I want you to stick it out together and work it out together, because in working it out together, you get to see yourself as you really are. You can't just amputate your spouse and make your problems go away. You are one flesh. You are connected forever. And so you have to work it out. But the world says, no, we'll just amputate that. Well, this divorce. No. Same with congregations. Stick together. We're going to talk more about this in the next show, but that will be later on today. Until then, peace on your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.